Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody because I had to record this one as late as I possibly could, and it's just hard to get people at this late an hour. I'm recording at about 9 o'clock Pacific. As of right now, the latest news on any front is that Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted out that the Lakers are interested in Trevor Ariza, which we've known now for months, and that the Wizards are interested in keeping Ariza long term, despite having just sold off pieces to get back under the luxury tax, having a point guard that's going to miss the next 12 months at least, and just they have every sign of getting ready for a tear down and rebuild kind of situation. So I'm going to get to Ariza. I'm going to get to Svi. I'm going to get to all kinds of other stuff. Anthony Davis. This is going to be probably the last podcast that I host before the trade deadline, and you know, unless something crazy happens and I have to hop in there and hop in here and record another one. I want to start from a more general standpoint. So segment one is going to be a larger overriding point, and then we'll get to some of these things specifically in terms of the moves that the Lakers are trying to make, the direction that they go in after the trade deadline, different scenarios that they might be presented with, all of that good stuff. I want to start, though, by saying the Lakers have to cool down the leagues. Like, it makes my job a lot easier because I aggregate all this stuff and I am paid to do so, and it gives us a lot of content that we're able to create. It probably makes the fan experience a lot more fun because you get to see these things, or you get to see some of the process and behind the scenes and stuff like that. But what it leads to is the more information that's out there about you, the easier you become to scout, right? That's just a general coaching principle. I remember when I was a coach, if I was playing in a game that I knew that was probably pretty easy to be scouted, I wouldn't use all of my team's plays that game. That's not, I'm no smarter than any other coach. There are definitely all kinds of other coaches out there who employ that same line of thinking with their coaching based on the situation that they're coaching in. But for the Lakers now, we know what their strategy is, right? We know basically how they want to operate. They're big game hunting, so any free agent that comes out there who has any link back to the city, any link to or who has a shared agent with LeBron, or has at one point been represented by Rob Pelinka, who has any kind of Lakers ties whatsoever, the Lakers are going to try to take advantage of those Lakers ties in a means to get that player at a depreciated value, usually on the trade market, right? Anthony Davis is the flavor of this season in this respect. In terms of smaller pieces that the Lakers find themselves interested in more often than not, it's anybody who has ever played for the Lakers or has played well against the Lakers. Because of that, what you wind up seeing is, like, Trevor Ariza right now. We knew that the Lakers were interested back before he was moved to Washington, right, from Phoenix. Wayne Ellington right now is probably going to hit the buyout market pretty soon. The Lakers are reportedly interested in him. Now that Trevor Ariza is in Washington, like I said earlier, the situation is probably calling for a rebuild, the Lakers once again find themselves interested there. But what this means for those teams that currently hold those assets is that they might hold on to those things a little bit longer, just to potentially maybe squeeze an asset out of the Lakers that they wouldn't have had to throw out there in other circumstances. When you're talking about Trevor Ariza right now, like, think about this honestly. Now, maybe the Washington Wizards are just that stupid. Maybe it's altogether possible. Maybe they just operate on a plane of stupid stupidity that I just cannot comprehend. But right now, they just made multiple trades to get below the luxury tax level because they want to limit costs for a team that they know has zero chance at winning a title. They moved Otto Porter, who's somebody who is, he's overpaid. I'll grant everybody that. He's overpaid, but they just moved him for nothing. They moved him for an expiring contract and a middling prospect and a middling pick, right? Like a 2023 second rounder or something dumb like that. That's not the move that a team that would be interested in investing in somebody like Trevor Ariza long term would probably make, right? Because they're probably thinking to themselves, all right, we can either pay Trevor Ariza at the very lowest the veterans minimum, which is I believe between $5 and $7 million, maybe probably even lower. It's in the $1 to $2 million range even. But we could pay him that, or we could try to draft and develop a player who can do some of those things that Trevor Ariza might be able to do for us, and also has a little bit more upside and is probably going to be cheaper, right? Those are the things that a team that is getting ready to rebuild, like the Washington Wizards currently are, would typically do. But because the Lakers have now been interested in Trevor Ariza for basically all of the season, they are probably going to hold on to him a little bit longer than they would normally, just in case the Lakers get desperate. And that desperation is something that we've seen become a trend here, is that the Lakers are desperate for Anthony Davis because everybody in the entire NBA understands how the Lakers are operating. They had options. They did. Before LeBron James got hurt, they were playing like a 4 or 5 seed in the Western Conference. Were they a championship contender? No, of course not. Were they a championship favorite? Obviously not. But they were a good team that was going to walk into this upcoming offseason with options. But everybody freaked out. LeBron got hurt. His own mortality, I think, freaked him out. It freaked the Lakers out. And they decided that they are going to go full bore after Anthony Davis. But in going full bore after Anthony Davis, they show their hand to everybody. And for the Pelicans, they're saying, oh, well, okay, we know exactly what your guys' offer is going to be a few months from now anyway. Nothing's going to change. You're not going to all of a sudden wake up on July whatever and say, you know what, we're going to move on from Anthony Davis. That's not going to happen. Meanwhile, you look at how Boston has handled things, and right now the Pelicans are forced to play a guessing game with Boston that they're going to continue to play because it helps their leverage with the Lakers, right? And so I just as like an larger overriding point here, I just, as nice as it is to have all these leaks and information that I can write and talk about, it would be nice if the Lakers operated a little bit more behind the scenes, snuck through some of these things. And it's something that Magic Johnson said that was going to be the team's MO anyway, was that they weren't going to leak. They weren't going to operate the way that they've been operating. But lo and behold, they have. And I think they need to close up some of these leaks. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of the move that the Lakers have actually made, and what that means for where the Lakers currently stand, and then we're going to talk about the moves that the Lakers might have to make moving forward if this Anthony Davis thing doesn't actually pan out. So hang tight.
Don't let your life pass you by. Weep not for the memory.
All right, so let's start with pouring one out for our boy's fee. Moment of silence for the player who provided so many puns and so much happiness to everybody who watched him in Summer League and with the G League and all of that. Let's also recognize that the player that they're getting, Reggie Bullock, is what we kind of sort of hope Svi Mykhailiuk turns into. And here's the thing for a couple things on both of these fronts. One, the Lakers are on a timeline where they can't wait for Svi Mykhailiuk's players like that to turn into players like Reggie Bullock. They need a few more guys who are that right now, who they can rely on to provide predictable production, right? That's what we've been talking about all year. The other thing is that there's also no guarantee that Svi turns into Reggie Bullock. Maybe he turns out to be better. Who knows? Maybe. I don't know. But there's no guarantee that he reaches the point that Reggie Bullock is at right now. Reggie Bullock is like a 40% career three-point shooter. This year, his numbers are slightly underneath 40%. I think they're like 38.3%. But he's close to 40% in every facet of being able to shoot the three-pointer. And the Lakers, you know, right now, statistically speaking, their best three-point shooter is Rajon Rondo, and he doesn't do so at anything close to from a quantity standpoint. He doesn't shoot enough three-pointers for his three-point percentage to really matter for what the Lakers are looking to do. So in terms of a basketball sensical move, given where the Lakers currently stand, this trade is a win. Would I have preferred not to give up a future second rounder or a second rounder along with Svi Mykhailiuk? No, probably not. But you just kind of sort of have to get small things like this done. And one thing that we've seen with the Lakers is that they're willing to buy second round picks anyway. So long as organizations out there are willing to make a few extra $100,000 out there and are willing to sell off second round picks, I don't put a whole bunch of stock into the importance of hoarding second rounders. For the basketball side of things, like with decisions that are now presented to Luke Walton, well, for one thing, he's going to have a lot of guys in that two or three range, the shooting guard, small forward range, who are going to be looking for minutes. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is already frustrated with the number of minutes that he's getting per game. Josh Hart has not lived up to the number of minutes that the Lakers are hoping to give him. Lance Stevenson is going to be looking for minutes at the 2/3. Kyle Kuzma is, technically speaking, the starting shooting guard when everybody is healthy, right? So either the Lakers are probably going to make another move here where, say, they move Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for something else that might help them across the roster, or one of these guys are going to find themselves on the outside looking into the rotation. And I think it's staring right at the Lakers in that, you know, Lance Stevenson probably doesn't have to play. But, you know, you look at the other percentage-wise, the guys who hit the three-pointer the best, it's Rajon Rondo and it's Lance Stevenson. And, you know, because KCP has been streaky, because Josh Hart has been, he had a really good start to the year with LeBron and has completely tailed off as of late, and is dealing with tendonitis, what you might find out is that Lance gets more minutes than I would like for him to, just because those other guys aren't ready to actually win those positional battles. So we'll see how these minutes go. We'll see how Luke Walton employs Reggie Bullock. He's not particularly great defensively. He's kind of there. He's okay. And he isn't given enough credit, according to some of my friends who cover the Detroit Pistons, for some of his abilities and dribble handoff situations and stuff like that. But we'll see. He's a good addition. And while it's a bummer to see a prospect who looked like he was fairly promising in Svi Mykhailiuk, this is kind of a move that the Lakers have to make if they're presented with it. It wouldn't shock me at all if Svi wound up being the kind of player that you look at and you say, gosh, they had to attach attach a second rounder to get a few months of Reggie Bullock. Like, that wouldn't surprise me at all. But those are gambles you make when your timeline is sped up because of the presence of somebody like LeBron James. And that's not even me regretting that LeBron James is here. That's just how these things go. So hopefully Bullock steps in and is able to carry, is able to come in and hit threes at the same rate, if not better, than he has over the course of his career to this point. And the Lakers get somebody who Pete and I have talked about this. There isn't anybody who the ball rotates over to him and you say, oh, yep, you don't want to leave that guy open. That's a knockdown shooter. Hopefully the Bullock turns into something close to that, if not that, in and of itself. We're going to take another quick second here, and we're going to talk about, I think Bullock provides a bit of a springboard from which we can figure out what the Lakers might be looking to do next if it isn't Anthony Davis. And it's looking increasingly likely that it won't be Anthony Davis. So I'll update that situation and talk about what the Lakers options are moving forward. We'll start here. The Lakers, right now, their number one problem is that they, A, aren't shooting enough three-pointers, and they aren't shooting enough three-pointers because they don't have enough willing three-point shooters who knock down three-pointers at a comfortable clip, a comfortable enough clip, to get those shots off on a regular basis. When you look at what the Lakers have struggled against this year, has been just math, right? Where the Lakers are one of the better field goal percentage shooting teams in the NBA. They're, I believe, top five as of heading into tonight's action. The last I checked on NBA.com, and you know, you would think, oh, cool, they're efficient enough to be able to get some work done on offense. The problem is, though, they're making a lot of 2-point shots when most of the teams that they're facing are hitting 3-pointers. And you know, it's just simple math. If one team is hitting 2-point shots at a 50% clip, and another team is hitting 3-point shots at a 33% clip, they are going to get roughly the same amount of production right there. And if that team that shoots those 3-pointers shoots as many 2-pointers as the other team and knocks down more than 33% of their threes, then just mathematically, the team that's relying only or mostly on 2-point shots, they're going to struggle just to keep up with the other team's score. We saw it the Clippers game, LeBron's first game back 2 games ago, was a perfect example of, it felt like the Lakers were outplaying the Clippers. It felt like they were getting kind of sort of whatever they wanted, but the Clippers were so freaking hot from three that game was a lot more interesting than maybe it should have been. That's just math. And what the Lakers are going to be looking for at this trade deadline, if it isn't Anthony Davis, and again, I've been predicting most of this week that I don't really see it happening. But if the Lakers are looking for 3-point shooting, there are a few shooters out there that they could target. They have Terrence Ross, who's out there and available in Orlando. They have obviously, they just picked up Reggie Bullock. Trevor Ariza is on their sights or is in their sights. Wayne Ellington is in their sights. So those players are out there and available. It's just a matter of what the Lakers are going to be willing to give up. And with all of those guys, they're all on contracts that ended at this season. And this to me is one of the few sources of optimism that you might be able to hold throughout all of this. Although there is a counterpoint to be made, and I'll get to that here in a second. But the one thing that I would say I'm kind of sort of optimistic about is that the Lakers haven't dipped into their plans of, okay, we're going to take on money heading into this upcoming offseason, when all year we have been told that we are not going to do that. That is one of the edicts on this season and the type of personnel that the Lakers invested in initially back last summer, and were have been looking at throughout this these trade markets, is that they have been reluctant to take on money because they believe that they have a chance at a bona fide superstar this upcoming offseason, if not two of them, right? And so for those who want to remain optimistic heading into this upcoming offseason, you could kind of sort of look at the fact that they haven't done that yet and say, okay, well, maybe at the very least, maybe if they, even if they haven't gathered intel that they for sure are getting somebody, they at least have learned that they aren't completely out on those players. So that's a nice, okay source of optimism, depending on the way you want to look at it. Now, the counter to that, though, is that in this Anthony Davis trade, they have said that they're willing to take on Solomon Hill and the, I think, $12 or $14 million that he's going to be making next year. Well, then that either tells you either A, that they are doing whatever they possibly can to get Anthony Davis right now before any other team can become interested in him, which is, I think, true to a certain extent. The other possibility there is that they have gotten some of that intel and they're saying, well, maybe we aren't going to get, you know, the Kevin Durants, the Kawhi Leonards, the whoever it is, Kyrie Irvings, whoever that extra superstar might be. We feel a little bit less confident in that. So therefore, we are more willing to take on money for Anthony Davis. There is a middle ground there, too, though, right? You could remain optimistic about your chances at a free agent, or you can say that, well, even if we take on money in the form of Solomon Hill, either we can stretch and waive that player so that his cap hit isn't so extreme, or we can move that player in the event that we have to in order to create cap space and figure out, you know, who else we're going to add on top of Anthony Davis this upcoming summer, right? So there's a lot going on there. But I do think, and one of the few sources of optimism that I have right now is that the Lakers are maintaining that edict of flexibility that they had heading into the season. Because, like, think about how depressing it would be if the Lakers, when they had $31, $32 million in cap space after signing LeBron, they spent it all on guys and probably overpaid a couple players just so that they would be on one-year deals, or either that or they let Julius Randle walk because they were reluctant to have any money leak into this upcoming summer, or they traded D'Angelo Russell way back in the day so that they would eventually be able to have LeBron and another star coming in free agency, and they needed all the flexibility they could have, only to find out once you're presented with that situation that, oh, nope, that didn't actually play out that way, and those assets that we either passed up on signing or let walk or traded away for this financial flexibility, those things aren't actually going to happen, and those missed opportunities, that opportunity cost is now a sunk opportunity cost. We now have to adjust as such because that's the new situation that we're presented with, right? So that's at least one source of optimism. I'm going to keep this show relatively short here just because I think there's a really good chance that I wind up recording a couple shows tomorrow. Maybe a deadline preview as we get close to it. I know for a fact that I'm going to be hopping on the Locked On NBA, not just the Locked On NBA show that I host that I record every Thursday and host for every Friday, but also we're doing the first ever Locked On NBA live show. So we'll do a live stream that you guys will be able to tune into as well. I'll be on there for about a half hour at some point tomorrow to go through all of the various scenarios that the Lakers have put us all through throughout this entire process. Pete will also be around when we record tomorrow's show. So we'll see. We'll be able to figure out how we feel about everything given the way that the deadline played out. So a ton that we're still probably going to find out in as early as the next few hours, definitely over the next, looks, what is it? What's we have about 13 hours or 12 hours and 30 minutes before the actual deadline that kicks in at noon Pacific tomorrow, being Thursday. So a lot to get to. This is going to be an interesting few hours here, and I'll do my best to get you as much information as I possibly can, as quickly as I possibly can. So for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you. Shoot, I might talk to you in about a half hour. Who knows? Have a good one.